The date is March 30th, 2020, and you're listening to The Other Side, the official podcast of the finest comedy club in all the land, the DC Improv. I'm your host, Chris White. It is strange times indeed where the finest comedy club in all the land cannot present live comedy, but we are still doing what we can to keep you entertained. If you go over to dcimprov.com, you can notice that we are trying to do some live streams in the days ahead, some unusual or outside-of-the-box content to keep you laughing. We're also going to the vault, pulling off archive material, hoping that it can still make you laugh. And that's what you're getting today. Today, you are going to listen to a full-length stand-up comedy album. Now, we did not feel comfortable asking local comedians to give away an entire album for free. That's probably a question we won't ask until week six of the quarantine, where the never-ending blood quest for content leads to riots in the streets. But we do know one guy who's particularly disposed to try to help out the improv. In other words, me. I used to work as a full-time touring stand-up comedian. For 6 years, I drove around the country performing at comedy clubs. I wasn't the world's greatest comedian. If I were, I wouldn't be hosting the DC Improv podcast right now. But I wasn't that bad. And one of my favorite things that I worked on during that time in my life was this album. It was recorded in 2011 in the DC Improv Lounge, and it's called I Take Requests. It's actually the culmination of a four-year project. Here's the premise. In 2006, I started taking requests. Friends and family and strangers could challenge me to do 4 minutes of jokes on the subject of their choice. Whatever they wanted. For each topic, whatever it was, I gave myself a few weeks to write the jokes and polish them up. Then I debuted it in front of a live audience, for better or for worse, and I recorded my performance and I would upload it on YouTube. Some of the ideas were thoughtful or made for me to succeed, others were cruel or made for me to fail, but I had a lot of fun working on all of them. I did 24 challenges, and I figured out a way to kind of stitch them together into one coherent performance. Well, hopefully coherent performance. Which, I think you'll see, wasn't the easiest task in the world. I'm going to run this 24 subjects down for you really quick. Listen. Here they are. Eating babies, carpentry, pet names, Belgium, blue, nunchucks, pandemics, Newton's third law, going to the zoo, fish sticks, body piercing, body hair, body odor, camping, ancient Sumeria, quadratic equations, blackberries, token white guys, bad breath, being lazy, gastroenterology, Phil Collins, Boy Scouts, and cars. So yeah, all that blended seamlessly into one 70-minute performance. Ha ha, piece of cake. This is presented free of charge, so we have just one request. If you get any enjoyment out of this, please support the DC Improv. Go over to dcimprov.com and check out your options. You could buy a venue credit, which means if you give us $20 now, when life gets back to normal, we will reward you with $25 worth of tickets. Pretty good deal. I think it's also still not too late to support our staff GoFundMe. That is a fundraiser. We are accepting donations on behalf of our staff who were laid off because of this coronavirus situation. I believe that will be open through the end of March, so still a couple days left if you want to kick a few bucks their way. Again, all that information is linked at dcimprov.com. And if you don't like this and you think I'm not funny and this is a terrible album, well, please remember, you won. I am no longer a full-time stand-up comedian, and I am no longer a threat to the comedy world. So, you know, just take your comments and shove them up your comment hole, I guess. I don't know. Anyhow, here it is. I take requests. Thanks.
Hey, oh no, thank you. You're too nice. Hello. Yay. My name is Chris White, and I'm 15 years old. Hooray. Yay. No, I'm 34. I don't look it, I know. I've been working on it. I've been growing a beard for the last 6 months, and it's good. Rich and full this time, not crappy like before. I was looking at you people as you came in. We have some bearded wonders in the crowd tonight, and that makes me so jealous. I love the bearded look. It's manly. It's just, it's the easiest way to change your look is you grow a beard, and the difference in your face, beard to no beard, it's like, is night and day. People don't even know who you are. This is, it's a crazy story. I was, I was about 10 years old, and my dad goes away on a fishing trip. And he's clean shaven. No beard, no mustache. See you later, kids. Back in a week. We're like, cool, dad, you have a good time. You know, you do what you do. And next Thursday rolls around. And me and my brother's hearing noise downstairs in the kitchen, like 2 in the morning. Something's going on. Yeah, we got to check this out. We run downstairs. 2 in the morning. My mom is standing there in the kitchen. She's in her bathrobe. She's with a guy we do not recognize who has a full beard. We're like, Mom, what's going on? Who's this guy? She's like, oh, kids. It's your dad. He's back from his trip. He grew a beard. And also now he is black. Yeah. Beards are sexy is the point. That's beards, not the sexiest hair. Some of you people know the sexiest hair. I want you to back me up on this. The sexiest hair in the world is the hair on a woman's thigh. Who's with me? Come on. Yes. 4 people. That's exciting. Yes. What we know and the rest of you need to learn is that the sexiest hair in the world is the Sasquatch thigh, the hair on a lady's thigh. Here's why. Because ladies, you know that when you shave your legs, you cheat. You don't do the whole thing because it's a lot of surface area and you're busy people. You have shit to do. So you stop here at the knee because who's going to see this? Nobody. Right? So if I'm making out with a beautiful lady and I get above the knee and she's got some hair in the thighs, that is sexy. Because it means the girl was not anticipating me doing that well. Yeah. Yeah. That means that I beat the spread. Yeah. And everyone loves an underdog. You know the most important hair in your body? This is weird. It's your eyebrows. I learned that from my older brother. He's an amazing artist. He's a cartoonist. And we were having a conversation once. He says, if you draw a face and the face has no eyebrows, you cannot tell what emotion the face is making. We're like, really? He's like, yeah. All right, so we held him down and we shaved off his eyebrows. And you could not tell how mad he was. It was awesome. It was like a magic trick. He's like, I'm gonna kill you. It's all sunshine from here.
Oh, boy.
I'm working on it. I've been growing the beard. I know we've thanked you guys a couple times. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. This has just been, it's been a lot of work to get to this point, and it's been many years in the making. I work hard. I really have worked hard to get here. My parents raised me with something called the Protestant work ethic, which, as a Catholic, means I work until the bars open. And then a Protestant picks up the slack. The work gets done, is what I'm saying. Seriously, I don't have too many lessons, but I occasionally I won't par. Don't be lazy. Just don't. It's not. It turns your back on what the dream of America is. It really is. I honest to God, I believe this in my heart, that the dream of America is that you are an immigrant and you come to this country and you bust ass and you work your fingers to the bone and you provide for your family so that one day your fat and ugly kids can complain about how lazy immigrants are. It's what made this country great. That's all I'm saying. I am 5th generation fat and ugly, and I'm proud. I am 5th generation. A lot of people think that my family's Irish because we're drunks and because my dad's a leprechaun. We're actually not Irish. We are Flemish. We come from Phlegm. I've lived in D.C. for a while. It's an international city. You meet a lot of interesting people. I was just chatting to some guy in the bar the other day. He's like, I am Flemish. I'm like, I don't know what that means. He's like, it means I am from Belgium. I'm like, oh, it means you're an asshole because I don't like Belgians. Who's with me? Come on. Yeah. Screw those people. I don't know what they are. Are they German? Are they French? Are they Dutch? I don't know what stereotype to use against them, and it makes me nervous. Are they some combination of the three? Are they like Jew-hating cowards who wear wooden shoes? I don't know. I'll tell you what I do know. I know that Belgium has been coasting on the waffle for too damn long. Yeah, like they did that and they don't have to contribute anything to the world anymore. There's ever a war in the Middle East, you never hear about Belgian shock troopers going in first. They're like, hey, Belgium, we could really use some help. I'm like, but Belgium makes waffles. no, Belgium, seriously. All right. Why don't we have a breakfast meeting to talk about the troops? And Belgium will bring the waffles. Belgium, all right. Powdered sugar on the waffles. And we will send Jean-Claude Van Damme. And some of the manlier Smurfs. It's not even a real country. It's just sad. Change my look in general. I've been thinking about getting a piercing. Guys can do that now. Guys can get piercings if they want. That's an option. 20 years ago, guys did not have that choice. That wasn't something. 20 years ago, if you saw a guy walking down the street and the guy had one earring, right or wrong, what did you say? Gay. One earring? Gay. You saw a guy walking down the street with two earrings? Pirate. Three earrings? Gay pirate. It wasn't right, but that's what you said. I can't believe that people get piercings just cosmetic, just to look better, that you're putting a needle in your through your body. You should have a good practical reason if you're putting a needle in your body, like acupuncture or heroin, something solid and real and tangible. I could get a practical piercing. I would get one of those things from my eye, like right up here. And then I get a chain attached to that. And then at the end of the chain, I'd get a pen. And I'd hang out at the bank all day. Make friends. You need anything signed? No, I'm gonna get Orange Julius. Yeah. The weirdest thing to me about all that stuff, like piercings and tattoos, people, they want you to know about it, which is, it's just been a change in the last 20, 25 years. It really is. Like, people used to hide these things or be modest about. Everyone wants you to know everything that they have done to them now. This is kind of a horrifying story, but I'll tell it as politely as I possibly can. I had a first date with a girl maybe like five years ago when met online. It was our first real conversation, our first real chit-chat, our first real conversation. And we're at dinner, and it's going pretty well. And then there's like a little awkward pause in the conversation, kind of like now. And I guess it went on a little too long, so she leans across the table. She goes, "Hey, I hope you're not intimidated, but I have a labial piercing." Well, I guess we're done talking about the weather. I don't know what to say to that. I was like, "Well, baby, I hope you're not intimidated, but I don't know what a labial is." And I'm not going to Google it. No. Oh. I know we've thanked you guys a couple times. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. This has just been, it's been a lot of work to get to this point, and it's been many years in the making. I work hard. I really have worked hard to get here. My parents raised me with something called the Protestant work ethic, which, as a Catholic, means I work until the bars open. And then a Protestant picks up the slack. The work gets done, is what I'm saying. Seriously, I don't have too many lessons, but I occasionally I'll impart. Don't be lazy. Just don't. It's not. It turns your back on what the dream of America is. It really is. I honest to God, I believe this in my heart, that the dream of America is that you are an immigrant and you come to this country and you bust ass and you work your fingers to the bone and you provide for your family so that one day your fat and ugly kids can complain about how lazy immigrants are. It's what made this country great. That's all I'm saying. I am fifth generation fat and ugly, and I'm proud. I am fifth generation. A lot of people think that my family's Irish because we're drunks and because my dad's a leprechaun. We're actually not Irish. We are Flemish. We come from Phlegm. I've lived in D.C. for a while. It's an international city. You meet a lot of interesting people. I was just chatting to some guy in the bar the other day. He's like, "I am Flemish." I'm like, "I don't know what that means." He's like, "It means I am from Belgium." I'm like, "Oh, it means you're an asshole, because I don't like Belgians. Who's with me? Come on. Yeah. Screw those people. I don't know what they are. Are they German? Are they French? Are they Dutch? I don't know what stereotype to use against them, and it makes me nervous. Are they some combination of the three? Are they like Jew-hating cowards who wear wooden shoes? I don't know. I'll tell you what I do know. I know that Belgium has been coasting on the waffle for too damn long. Yeah, like they did that and they don't have to contribute anything to the world anymore. There's ever a war in the Middle East, you never hear about Belgian shock troopers going in first. They're like, hey, Belgium, we could really use some help. Like, but Belgium makes waffles. Like, no, Belgium, seriously. All right, why don't we have a breakfast meeting to talk about the troops? And Belgium will bring the waffles. Belgium, all right. Powdered sugar on the waffles. And we will send Jean-Claude Van Damme. And some of the manlier Smurfs. Not even a real country. It's just sad. Waffles are damn good, though. That's why I'm torn. I have waffles for breakfast and 3 martinis for lunch and then hot dogs for dinner, which is good. I love hot dogs. Anyone else? Oh, nature's candy, the hot dog. It's good stuff. I love it. The only bad thing, sometimes eating a hot dog, it's like making out with your best friend's sister. Right after you're done, you don't feel that good about it. But you know you're gonna do it again one day. Just a matter of time, you go crawling back to those dirty, slutty hot dogs. With their belly rings and their short shorts, they're delicious. I eat hot dogs. I eat a lot of stuff. I don't eat fish. I do not eat fish because fish live in the ocean and I have peed in there. No. I do eat fish sticks, though, because I'm not sure what's in fish sticks, but I'm pretty sure it's not fish. Fish sticks, or as I like to call them, hot dogs of the sea! Yay! Yum! I had fish sticks all the time when I was a kid. That was a part of our regular rotation that we had. It's like Monday was fish stick night, and Tuesday was taco night, and Wednesday through Sunday was I'm not your goddamn slave. You're suffocating me. I'll be at the bar at Bennigan's. Don't call unless bone is poking through the skin. Night. Yeah. Fish sticks really just an excuse to eat tartar sauce. That's really all they are. Tartar sauce is good. I actually, you know they make it? I saw this on the Discovery Channel. Tartar sauce is mayonnaise and the tears of sailors. That's what they do. They get a vat of mayonnaise, they grab a sailor by the belt, they lean him over, and they're like, tell us about the mermaid who's suing you for child support. Discovery Channel doesn't lie. Some people like to argue about food, get really upset about it. I used to date a girl who was, she was like disgusted if I would ever eat veal in front of her. She's like, you can't eat veal, and yet she would just eat baby carrots like nobody's business. And do you know how they raise those carrots? They're in total captivity. They hardly move their whole life. And they're just slaughtered. The arguments would just be weird. She's like, I can't believe you eat veal. Would you eat a human baby? Like, well, A, that's a really weird logical leap you just made. And B, yeah, I would. And I think anyone would. I'm not saying it would be plan A, but I'm just saying if you were on a plane that went down in the Andes and the rescue was a couple days away and people were getting hungry and there was that one kid on the flight who cried the whole time. Last in, first out. That's all. Don't judge me. And I... He joined the Boy Scouts this year, which is awesome. I did that when I was a kid. Anyone here man enough to admit they're a Boy Scout? Anyone? Yeah. Hey, there we go. Boy Scout motto, what is it? Be prepared. And you were. Well, good. It's great advice. Be prepared. Be prepared, especially the day you wear your Boy Scout uniform to junior high school. Because some shit's going to go down that day. A little free advice. He wanted us to go camping because they're going on a Boy Scout. He's like, just come camping. It'll be fun. No, not a fan of camping. I never have been. Never will be. I like day hiking. I like getting out there. I just feel like you should treat nature like an ex-girlfriend. You know, sometimes spend the day with it. That's fine. But never sleep with it again. It's just that's when mistakes start happening. And it's, but he wanted to go camping. There's only one thing I've ever really liked about camping. And this is actually kind of good. It's campfire stories, which is... I love them. It's a scary campfire story. My dad told a great. Well, we have enough time. I'll tell you one. It's horrifying. So brace yourself. Gird whatever needs girding. I guess the first time my dad told me this, I was probably 11. I think we're all sitting around the campfire. Leans in. He's like, "All right. Once upon a time, there's a couple making out in a car on Lover's Lane. I'm not going to lie, it's going very well for this guy. Pretty far past second base. All right. And they got the radio on to set the mood a little bit. And all of a sudden, they hear a news report break in, and apparently there's a serial killer with a hook for a hand running around killing people who are making out in cars on Lover's Lane. And the woman, she thinks she hears a scratching at the door. She's like, "Oh my God, we got to get out of here." And the guy's like, "No way in hell. We are finishing what we started." He was well past third at that point. So they went ahead and they stayed in that car. And they had unprotected sex and that woman got pregnant. And she trapped that guy in a loveless marriage. And 11 years later, I took you camping. Scary stuff. We decided we weren't going to do camping. We're going to help with Pinewood Derby, which will be fun. Which is, you guys know what Pinewood Derby is? Boy Scouts? Yeah, some of you do. Some of you not so much. For those of you who are not familiar with Pinewood Derby, it's the dumbest event in the history of organized competition. It's awful. You're a kid, and they give you this block of wood. And I don't even think it's pine wood. I think it's balsa wood. They give you these four crappy plastic wheels, these four tinny little nails you can bend them with your fingers, and like, you gotta build a race car! And the track, it's like a ramp. It's maybe 10 feet long, downhill, right? And you're supposed to know aerodynamics and woodwork. It's a horrible event for kids, because kids have no idea how to do this shit. So it all comes down to who has the coolest dad. That's the contest. That's who builds the car, dad or mom. They do all the work. Yeah, and we were kids. We couldn't keep up. This kid down the street, his dad was a NASA engineer. Booking wind tunnel times for his kids. He had, like, the new Yankee workshop in his garage. He had whittled it down to, like, the size of a toothpick. It had a flux capacitor on it. It was the greatest Pinewood Derby car ever made. My dad can't do that. I'm like, he just cannot. My dad is a lawyer. So we built our car to jump the tracks and hit the other cars. Yeah, yeah, and then you sear your way to victory. That's what you do. Elegant, really. It is. We cut a slot in the top for his business card. That was the only change we had. It's a weird topic. One of my favorite myths is about eating babies, which I love. I should say first, I love mythology. It's my favorite. I don't know if anyone here is religious. I'm not like religious, but if I was going to be like religious, I would go for the Greek gods. I would go for that. That they are the easiest ones. They're super easy to understand. Some guy was like, "Hey man, why is there lightning?" "I don't know." Bam, Zeus. Like, all right, yeah, sign me up for your newsletter. The problem is, like, we have science and now we know, why there's lightning. So we need like new Greek gods for the new unanswerable questions. Questions like, why did Daddy leave? Well. Daddy left because Hyperkantos, the god of loveless marriages, got together with Sidonia, the goddess of prescription painkillers. Oh! And they put a spell on Daddy? But the eating babies myth is one of my favorite ones. Myths are, they always have these great stories, just very clear, awesome moral messages. Kronos, king of the universe, the whole universe, not just the small, the whole universe. And there was a prophecy that one day Kronos' son would take it all away from him. And Kronos considers this, and he decides the best course of action is to go ahead and have children and then eat them. And I think that is a very elegant way of saying that guys hate condoms. Just a lot. I would rather lose control of the universe than wear a condom. That's what we're saying. I don't know, man. It's a weird thing. I love mythology. I love the Norse stuff. They had Thor, the movie just came out. It was exciting. I love Norse mythology. That's crazy. In Norse mythology, to get to the world of the gods, you had to go over a rainbow bridge because the world of the gods was a gay disco. My brother turned me on to the Sumerians, which is kind of a cool thing, man. So that's if you guys don't know Sumeria, it was the culture where Iraq is now, and they've made just a steady upward line of progress since then. As the Sumerians perfected the wheel, and Iraqis perfected the car bomb. It's just been a natural straight line to the future. I love it. But no, they have this one story. It's like the greatest epic of Gilgamesh. It's one of the oldest stories in the world. It's a great story. He's their king, but he's not just like sit on his throne with his big fat ass king. He gets out there. He's doing stuff. He goes out. He builds cities with his bare hands. He fights armies all by himself. He punches demons in his face. And why does he do these things? Because he came from a time when we still held our politicians accountable. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Now people are like, well, I'll try to fix the economy. No! If the economy's broken, you find the dragon responsible and rip its balls off. That's what I'm saying. You make $400,000 a year. What are we paying you for? I didn't want to get worked up there. I'm sorry. That was too much. I think our president right now, he was given a horrible hand, and he's doing a good job. He got us free health care, I think. I don't know. Do we? Right? I think we have free health care. I think. I'm not sure. So maybe he's... I don't know. I think if we do have free health care, I'm glad they did it, but I kind of wish that they had waited a little bit until, like, the next round of swine flu thinned the herd a little bit. Kind of bend the cost curve down. Like, sometimes you're standing in the grocery store or in traffic on 66, and you're like, well, we don't need all these people. Come on, swine flu. I'm not saying everyone should get sick and die, just the people we don't need, like people who use cashforgold.com or people who vote libertarian and think it makes a difference. That's all, yeah, that's, yeah. No one's gonna miss them. I feel bad for people who got swine flu. Not so much because they were sick, because it sounded like they had a pussy disease. That's a terrible. What happened to Joe? Oh, he got a cold meant for a pig. Little bitty piggy sniffles. If you want a disease, you want a man's disease. You want black death. That is what you want. That is a very intimidating name for a disease or a stripper. Either one. Black death. If it's on the main stage, you're not gonna go, are you? No, it's scary. Black death. If you call in sick with black death, no one is asking you to work from home that day. But we don't have that anymore. All we have are the diseases jump over from the sissy animals. It's like swine flu or bird flu or Spanish flu. I want diseases from real animals. Like, hey, where did Joe go? Oh, God, Joe. He got the grizzly bear diarrhea. Between that and the sperm whale syphilis, they're not sure he's going to be able to walk again, huh? Well, I'm glad you guys seem to be having a good time. Live it up and enjoy yourself. The food is good and the drinking is good and all that. Yeah, good. Yeah. No smoking. I apologize if that's something you enjoy. No, you can't really do that indoors anymore. Anyone miss the smoke? Anyone?
No.
Yeah. Well, let's be fair. If you miss it, cough and use your one good lung and spit on the floor. Come on. Thank you. Yes. It sounds stupid. This sounds stupid. I miss the smell sometimes. I never smoke, but I miss the smell a little bit. It sounds weird because I smell a cigarette, and it actually makes me think of my dad, which sounds... No, that sounds weird, but have you ever heard that scent is linked to memory? Have you ever heard that? Yeah. I saw it on a deodorant ad. I'm pretty sure it's true. And they say that, but you never see anyone get nostalgic over a fart. That never happened. You never on a crowded elevator and all of a sudden someone's like, ah, the summer of 1984. The sloppy joes were exquisite at Camp Brassica Falls that year. No, I smell a cigarette. My dad used to smoke 3 packs a day of Marlboro Reds. Like, yeah, like it was his job. Like if he got enough miles, they'd make him the Marlboro Man. We think that's why he wore chaps around the house. We're not sure. Oh God! And me and my brothers, we hated that cigarette smell. So we used to go and we would find his packs of cigarettes and hide them. And he was not a fan of that. So he would go and find my older brother's seizure medication and hide it. Yeah. And after that, it was just a game of chicken. Wait a couple hours and Dad starts twitching and then Dave starts twitching. You know, it's like, who's going to win? I don't know. Dad's jingling his car keys. Dave's biting a pencil. It's like, fight it. You'll pass out soon. Just fight. Some people just smell, though. I think, if you work in an office, you probably work with 2 people that are in every office. One is, like, perfume lady, which I used to work in an office with a perfume lady. You guys know, it's like, we're perfume lady. It's, like, right before she leaves the house in the morning, she goes, like, flash dance on herself with a bucket of perfume. No one knows what she's covering, but she's covering something, right? And you never really see her as much as you're walking down the hallway, and next you know, you're flat on your ass, and your eyes are watering, like the cloud knocked you over. And then there's usually, like, smelly dumpster guys, dude, like, you know, I don't know, 400 pounds, something like that, kind of lives at home, plays a lot of first-person shooter video games, kind of keeps to himself, just smells, you know? No one ever says anything, because that would be rude, right? Man. And one time, I was on the elevator at work, and a perfume lady was already on the elevator, so I held my breath and I got in. And and right before the door closes, chubby little finger shoots the door. And it's dumpster guy. And he gets on the elevator, and right there, those two smell fronts collided. And right there on the elevator, it started to rain. Mayonnaise. I don't understand the science. I'm just telling you what I saw. But no one ever says anything. Like, oh, it'd be rude. I don't want to tell them. No, you guys, say something. You have to say something. There should be an HR professional in every office, and their only job should be going desk to desk telling people the things that everyone else is afraid to say. You know? Joe, you smell. It's starting to scare the clients. Next desk. Mary, every time you talk about your cats like they're human beings, it makes us want to cry and punch you in the face. Come on. Get on eHarmony. Straighten that stuff out. God, people need your help. They need your help. This is the truth. You cannot smell your own breath. That is a weird scientific fact. It's some weird natural defense mechanism that nature has given. You can't smell your own breath. You're not particularly bothered by your own farts. It's not racist if you say it. Yeah. The stupid wops in the crowd know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So you gotta say something. If it's a correctable problem, you have a seed in your teeth, you have bad breath, you have a really ugly wife, they're correctable problems. Say something. Give people gum is the moral. Or have gum taken from you. Gum's a weird thing. I don't... Gum is weird. I opened a pack of gum near a friend the other day. He's like, give me a piece of gum. Not, can I have a piece of gum? Give me a piece of gum. I was like, no. I paid for this. My understanding is this is a capitalist society, and I think it's mine. You know, it's like... It's like, no, give me a piece... People feel entitled to your gum. There's only really 2 things in the world that even though you own them, people feel entitled to them. And one is gum, and 2 is Jerusalem. Now, weird, right? Yeah. I don't know. Ugh. You know, the worst breath is this. Ugh. My grandfather, he had horrible breath. Just terrible. He used to smoke a pipe and chew tobacco and drink like 2 pots of coffee a day. And you'd see him and he'd be like, I give grandpa a kiss. Like, nah. and a manly fist bump with me standing behind you. How's that sound? He did find a way to beat it, though. He stopped breathing. Oh? I miss him. I do miss him. I like I said, I'm 34, and you get to this stage in life, and you know it's a sad thing, but it happens. People start disappearing out of your life, and it makes you think about things. You got to appreciate people while they're here, and you gotta spend time with them, and you know embrace them while they're here. And I'm glad we got to spend a lot of great times with all my grandparents, and I'll never forget my grandfather. He was like Yoda. He was like this little wrinkled old dude, and had so much wisdom, and you just got to get it out of his skull. You just got to ask him the questions. I mean, he lived in this farm in Pennsylvania, and we used to go and visit him when we were kids, and we would go and play on the farm. You know, we were out there in the fields one day, me and my brothers, and it was like beautiful, you know, green fields and blue skies, and we're looking up at the sky, and we think up one of those classic kid questions, you know. And we run up to Grandpa, and he's like sitting there on the porch in his rocking chair, smoking his pipe, chewing his tobacco, and you know, run up to him, we're like, Grandpa! Why is the sky blue? And I'll never forget his answer. It was perfect. He said, sometimes you don't need to understand why something is to appreciate that it's beautiful. Yeah. Well, I'm paraphrasing a little bit. What he actually said was, stop asking fag questions. But we're smart kids. We picked up on the subtext, you know. I think of every time I see a blue sky now. I do. I love blue. It's actually one of my favorite colors. I love wearing the color blue, which is difficult because when we were growing up, the one side of the street was blood territory, and the other side was Confederate Civil War reenactors, just bayoneting. That was all the time, man. But you got to go home to the old neighborhood. What are you going to do? That's, you know, I'm very fortunate. I get home and visit my parents when I can, you know, and it's fun. It's a good time. You guys get home and visit your parents much? Yeah, it's a good thing. It's nice. Like I said, treasure them while they're here. You know, it's a good time. I like going. I was a little mad when I went home last time. I was annoyed at my mom. She got a dog, which is infuriating to me. Show of hands. Who has a dog? Anyone? Quite a few. Right down front. Yeah, and did you have pets when you were a kid? Yes, and because kids should have pets. You should have pets. And my mom would never, ever let us have pets. And the reason she gave was heart. This is what she always said to us. She said, if you kids get a pet, you will play with the pet for 6 months. And then mom will be the one who does all the work to take care of the pet. Right? Yeah. You guys know how kids are. My sister wants nothing to do with that. So she goes straight to the mall and gets pregnant. She played with that kid for like 6 months, but mom ended up taking care of it. Darn my slutty sister. Oh. She's a pistol. I love my nephew, though. He's just adorable. I like being an uncle. It's just a fun thing, and you get to, you know, it's like being a parent without half the legal responsibility. They can't really throw you in jail unless you really screw up, and it's fun. We just try to do the fun uncle things, just be the cool uncle. And the other day we're home and we're like watching television and it was some Discovery Channel thing and it was lions and they were just ripping the shit out of some gazelle. And he's like, let's go to the zoo! Because he thinks that's what happens at the zoo. So we're like, all right, let's get you used to disappointment at an early age. Let's go in the car. Guys Day at the Zoo! So we go out, we're like, yeah, Guys Day at the Zoo, it's gonna be awesome. We're gonna go see the lions, just me and my nephew, and we're going, we're watching the lions, and it's all exciting. And then no good deed goes unpunished, because as we're watching the lions, one of the guy lions decides it's time to put a move on one of the lady lions. I'm like, that's not my job to explain this. That's his dad's job, if they ever find his dad. So I'm like, don't ask questions. And he starts pulling at my shirt. He's like, Uncle Chris. I'm like, what? He's like, what are they doing? I'm like, oh, God. They are trying to make a baby lion. And he looks up at me, and he goes, yeah, well, no duh, but why are cats doing it doggy style? Your mom is a slut. Wow. He joined the Boy Scouts this year, which is awesome. I did that when I was a kid. Anyone here man enough to admit they're a Boy Scout? Anyone? Yeah. Hey, there we go. Boy Scout motto. What is it?
Be prepared.
And you were. Well, good. It's great advice. Be prepared. Be prepared. Especially the day you wear your Boy Scout uniform to junior high school. Because some shit's going to go down that day. A little free advice. He wanted us to go camping because they're going on a Boy Scout. He's like, just come camping, it'll be fun. Not a fan of camping. I never have been, never will be. I like day hiking. I like getting out there. I just feel like you should treat nature like an ex-girlfriend. You know, sometimes spend the day with it, that's fine. But never sleep with it again. It's just that's when mistakes start happening. But he wanted to go camping. There's only one thing I've ever really liked about camping. And this is actually kind of good. It's campfire stories, which is, I love them. It's a scary campfire story. My dad told a great, well, I think we have enough time. I'll tell you one. It's this is horrifying, so brace yourself. Gird whatever needs girding. I guess the first time my dad told me this, I was probably 11, I think. We're all sitting around the campfire. Leans in. He's like, all right. Once upon a time, there's a couple making out in a car on Lover's Lane. I'm not going to lie, it's going very well for this guy. Pretty far past second base. All right. And they got the radio on to set the mood a little bit. And all of a sudden, they hear a news report break in, and apparently there's a serial killer with a hook for a hand running around killing people who are making out in cars on Lover's Lane. And the woman, she thinks she hears a scratching at the door. She's like, oh my God, we gotta get out of here. And the guy's like, no way in hell. We are finishing what we started. He was well past third at that point. So they went ahead and they stayed in that car. And they had unprotected sex and that woman got pregnant. And she trapped that guy in a loveless marriage. And 11 years later, I took you camping. Scary stuff. We decided we weren't going to do camping. We're going to help with Pinewood Derby, which will be fun. Which is, you guys know what Pinewood Derby is? Boy Scouts? Yeah, some of you do. Some of you not so much. For those of you who are not familiar with Pinewood Derby, it's the dumbest event in the history of organized competition. It's awful. You're a kid, and they give you this block of wood. And I don't even think it's pine wood. I think it's balsa wood. They give you these four crappy plastic wheels, these four tinny little nails you can bend them with your fingers, and like, you gotta build a race car! And the track, it's like a ramp. It's maybe 10 feet long, downhill, right? And you're supposed to know aerodynamics and woodwork. It's a horrible event for kids, because kids have no idea how to do this shit. So it all comes down to who has the coolest dad. That's the contest. That's who builds the car, dad or mom. They do all the work. Yeah, and we were kids. We couldn't keep up. This kid down the street, his dad was a NASA engineer. Booking wind tunnel times for his kids. He had, like, a new Yankee workshop in his garage. He had whittled it down to, like, the size of a toothpick. It had a flux capacitor on it. It was the greatest Pinewood Derby car ever made. My dad can't do that. He just cannot. My dad is a lawyer. So we built our car to jump the tracks and hit the other cars. Yeah, yeah. And then you sear your way to victory, is what you do. Elegant, really. It is. We cut a slot in the top for his business card. That was the only chance we had. He did his best. I don't understand why my dad never learned that. So I guess you just learn it from your parents, your carpentry. And my grandfather was an amazing carpenter. He was like old world craftsman. He built his farmhouse with his own two hands. And then the very day he finished, he burned it down for the insurance money. Old world Flemish craftsmanship. That's how they do it in the Low Country. Man. He did what he could, but it wasn't like, oh God, one summer, NASA dad builds his kids a treehouse. Well, treehouse is an inadequate description. He builds his kids an Ewok village. 7,000 feet in the air, they genetically bred the Ewoks. It was so crazy. It was out of control. And we go running. I'm like, Dad, you got to build us a treehouse. He's like, I can't do that. But what I am going to build you is a 2x4 with a nail in it. Then you can go take their treehouse. Outside the box. That's good. We wanted all kinds of weapons when we were kids. We did. We wanted nunchucks. That was a big one. We wanted nunchucks. My whole neighborhood went through a ninja phase. Yeah. There was a lot of people. Like, I read Karate Kid, Karate Kid 2. Was any ninjas here tonight? Who clapped? Silent killer. Shitty ninja. We wanted nunchucks, because everyone was ordering like karate weapons out of the back of like comic books, like throwing stars and nunchucks. You're like, yeah, it's nunchucks. And they're like, no. You can actually make your own, though. It's not that hard. All you need is the legs off of a desk chair and 2 eye hooks and a chain, like a bike chain. And you have the perfect weapon for your dad to beat you with because you ruined his desk chair and his bike. My parents never got us cool stuff. They never got us nunchucks. They wasted money. We wouldn't nunchuck lessons. Would that have been too much to ask? No, they got us stupid, worthless things like music lessons, and they signed us up for sporting leagues, and they paid for college. Dumb stuff that no one ever uses. I'm 34. I have a history degree. I use it maybe once a month. I can think of 10 situations a day where I wish I knew how to use nunchucks. The grocery store, the shower. I'm not gonna explain it. Let's just. No, I am 34. That's something I've had to deal with. I've been getting older. I hate to complain about it because it's not a bad age. It's a great age, but you get older and you start to things just start changing. It's a downhill slope, and it's a weird thing. And it's again, there's something I've had to deal with lately. It's strange. There's like little cues, like weird things that you pick up on. Like, I realized the other day that apparently I now love Phil Collins. Like, when he announced his retirement, I cried a little bit. That's what I'm saying. Like, Phil Collins, how could I love Phil Collins? It's like, no one grows up in life thinking, I'm going to love Phil Collins. You start out, you're thinking, I'm going to be cool. I'm going to be independent. I'm going to be my own man. I'm going to listen to heavy metal. Yeah, I'm going to listen to classical. I'm going to listen to jazz. And then someday after your 30th birthday, you never know exactly when it is, you're driving along and you got the windows up. The radio's not even on. All of a sudden, you're singing Sussudio at the top of your lungs. And you're like, there must be some misunderstanding. There must be some mistake. No, I don't even know that I knew the lyrics to Sussudio. It doesn't matter. It's on your DNA. It's like a retrovirus. He reaches in, he's like an invisible touch, and he slowly tears you apart. Ah! Ah! Woo! Phil Collins, the sad thing is, you grow up, you're like, I know one day I'm going to turn into my parents. But I was kind of hoping I would turn into my dad. And turning into mom. Love Phil Collins. Probably want to get a minivan soon. Start drinking hard alcohol out of a portable coffee mug. Then one day I'll show up at a parent-teacher conference in a tube top and the transformation will be complete. Body starts falling apart when you get older. You start waking up with injuries you didn't have when you went to sleep, which is fun. Yeah, that's a good one. I went to bed the other day feeling great. I wake up, stab wound in the shoulder. It's like, I understand I left the towels on the floor, but this seems a bit extreme. A lot of your body system starts shutting down. I had a problem like a year ago, and this really freaked me out. It was the first time I had something significantly wrong. I was just eating food like I usually do 7 or 8 times a day. And I noticed that food was starting to just kind of stop right here in the middle of my throat. And kind of hang out for a little bit. Like my stomach was some sort of exclusive nightclub that it was waiting to get in. And then after half an hour, it was like, screw this. I didn't put on heels to wait in line. And it turned around and it left. And that was happening every meal. And I'm not a doctor, but I'm pretty sure you need food to live. So, and I need my throat. That's where I keep my pride. So I'm a grown. I have to be grown up about this. So I just go and I figure I have a throat problem. I need a throat doctor. So I go and I find a gastroenterologist. Call them, and I don't know. This is an adult lesson I learned. Have you ever tried to get an appointment with a specialist without a referral? No, I did not know this. Apparently, it's a hate crime. That's my understanding. It's like genocide. Appointment with a specialist, throwing a biracial baby out of a car. It's like those, it's like that. It's apparently that bad. I called him like, hey, I'm having a real problem. You know, I can't eat food. She's like, do you have a referral? Like, no. And then I hear this. She hung up. Not, no, I'm sorry. We need you to get a referral. Please, blah, blah, blah. Hung up. I called right back. I'm like, hello? I'm having some problems. I can't keep food down. And she's like, do you have a referral? I said, yes, I do have a referral. It's from my primary care physician, and his name is Dr. Google. I typed in gastroenterologist with a whore for a receptionist. And your number was the one on top. Yeah, good times. I love Dr. Google, though. He's great. You guys, some of you probably go. He's great. Just 24/7, makes house calls. Not always great with the diagnosis. There was a 4-month period where I thought I had feline AIDS. And either Dr. Google was wrong or I am the feline equivalent of Magic Johnson. Playing it safe. I'm investing in lots of, strip malls and movie theaters and underprivileged feline neighborhoods. Just to, I'm going to do the right thing. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Just start deteriorating. I used to be a varsity athlete. I did. I used to be a I was varsity quiz bowl. I wish that was a joke. This is embarrassing. This is a great story. My older brother and I were walk-ons to the high school quiz bowl team. They used to hand-pick people for the team. And they did not want us. And they did not want us for a horrible reason. They did not want us because we were street trivia. We learned all our trivia on the playgrounds. That's how we threw down. People would come up to us. They were like, hey, man, who was the first president born in a hospital? We'd be like, Jimmy Carter, bitch! Ah! Ah! Rock the rim! Like, you guys are crazy. You can't be on the team. We're like, screw this. We started showing up for practice every single day, rain or shine. Every day we showed up. And after 3 weeks, they were like, you know what? You guys got some crazy street energy. You can be on the team. And we took them. They were so white bread and straight-laced. And we shook them up. And we took them all the way to the top. And we won Pennsylvania State Quiz Bowl Champions 1994, Pancras High School. Proudest day of my life. It was a small parade. Me and my brother in a wagon getting pulled up and down the driveway, but a parade. A parade nonetheless. And I quit. I got out of the top. I'm like, it's not getting better than this. I will sit in a bar and listen to Glory Days for the rest of my life. I don't care. The story gets a little sad. My brother stayed in, and he got recruited by Penn State. It's big time, collegiate quiz bowl. And you guys, if you're college sports fans, you know the pressure. The pressure on a student athlete. It's win, win, win. You lose one match, no playoffs. Win, win, win. And my brother was 18, and he couldn't handle the pressure, and he started popping that ginkgo biloba. Yeah, because it helps your memory, and he gets addicted. He's addicted. And once you're addicted, you start digging that hole deeper and deeper. It's a vicious cycle. Oh, just thousands and thousands of dollars in debt, and he had nowhere to go. And these bookies drifted into Happy Valley. They're like, hey, man, we heard you got a problem, but you got to do something for us. We're going to take care of it. He's like, well, what do I got to do? They're like, point shaving. I want you to throw a couple matches. He had to do it. He didn't have a choice. He was, oh. He was so bad at it. He was like ringing in for math questions, going like, George Washington! He was just like, they caught him, took away his scholarship, kicked him out of school, and it ruined his life. And now he spends every single day getting drunk, trying to forget. But that's the thing about Ginkgo Biloba. Somebody got there a little sooner than the rest. That's all right. But I was great. I was smart. And now my brain is mush. I have nothing left. I have really nothing left in the tank. My nephew wanted help with his homework the other day. He's working on some physics project. He's like, hey, it's physics. Yay. He's working on some diorama. He has to, Uncle Chris, I need your help. Why do rockets fly? Well, that's easy. It's Newton's, third law? Every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. I'm like, oh, well, it's simple. What happens is the rocket pushes down on the ground. And then the ground pushes up on the rocket. So he's like, hey, how does the ground push up on a rocket? Well, what you're not understanding is that the rocket is pushing. Jesus makes rockets fly. He swoops down on his magical unicorn and carries them aloft to the stratosphere where Buddha takes over. That's more his bailiwick. Build the hell out of that diorama. And after he had failed his project, I realized I just couldn't communicate to him. There's so many better ways of explaining that. Every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. If you fire a gun, there's kickback. If you sit in a desk chair with wheels and you shoot a fire extinguisher, you are immediately asked to leave Staples. And you'll be like, I'm a scientist! And they'll be like, scientists wear pants. Yeah. Awful. I want to help with this math homework. I don't know why. That was, well, I do know why. He wanted help. I was wearing my tracksuit from the Math Olympics at the time. And he's a smart kid. He works on it's an advanced math class. So he's pretty young, but it's like quadratic equations. I'm like, well, that's no problem. I ace this stuff. I was quiz bowl champion. This is no problem, right? Quadratic equations, give me that stuff. And I pick it up, and I look at the sheet, and I realize within about 3 seconds that the part of my brain that once knew quadratic equations died. And it's not an open casket funeral. Let's put it that way. It's gone. Not going to use dental records. We're not identified. It's gone. I had to Google it. I did. I had to go to my doctor. I went and I said, hey. Does anyone know the quadratic equation? No, of course you. AX squared plus BX equals C. AX squared plus BX equals C. And if you graph it, it makes a picture of a man watching Battlestar Galactica in his mom's basement. It's true. Numbers don't lie. I don't know. And you know why you forget this stuff? You know why you forget all these things? It's because you tell yourself, I will never need this. That's what you say. I will never need this. If you take one thing home from the show, it's this. Study. Just study. Every day, every free second you have that you are not, if you have any free time, just study. Cram that information back in your skull. Read books. Watch Discovery Channel. Do whatever. Study every day, because you never know when you're going to need that one piece of information. A couple months ago, I go to visit my great uncle in the nursing home. And I visit him because he is a veteran of the Spanish-American War. And we should support the troops. So let the Rough Riders roll. So then. Here's my typical visit with my very old uncle. I come in and I tell him about my day and how my family's doing, and then he would complain about how much he hates Asian immigrants. Just he's very upset about all of them. Just does Asian. Hey, I hate the Chinese. I hate the Japanese, the Taiwanese, the Korean. Oh, I hate them. And he's very upset. He feels very passionately about this. They're stealing our jobs. They're coming into our country. They're impregnating our women. Ah, and he's a very old guy anger. And just, you know, his big flecks of spittle shooting off his face. And he starts out, he's always kind of red, but then he gets like red and then beet red and then magenta. And I'm just sitting there leafing through my magazine, letting him get it out of his system. It's good. It gets his heart rate up. And all of a sudden, I notice he turns purple and he starts grabbing at his chest. He's like, oh my God. I'm like, what's happening? He's like, I'm having an attack. I'm like, holy crap, what do we do? He's like, I need my pills. I'm like, well, where are your pills? They're on the nightstand. So I run over to the nightstand and I grab the bottle of pills and I say, how many pills do you need? And he says, I need X pills. If 4X squared plus 3X equals 7. And I couldn't do the math. And my uncle died. And I think the ironic thing is, if I was Asian, I probably could have done the math. That was terrible. We can be hard on people like that, though. I don't know. I understand. That's the other thing I think about as I get a little older. And, you know, you think about the old people in your life and the amount of stuff, the amount of change we see in this world. And, you know, people are sometimes like, oh, racist old guys are horrible. Think about the span of their life, just all the stuff they went through. When my uncle was born, you know, there were no cars. If you had a horse, it was amazing. You know, that was incredible. You know, back when he was born, they hired at his company, they hired token black guys. And now his nephew can get hired as a token white guy. Think about how different that world is, you know? I've been hired as a token white guy. It has happened. It seems strange, but you should know that show business is a horrible racist industry. And I swear to God, they will hire token white guys. If there's a show and there's a black headliner and a black MC, sometimes they will say, we do not want the show to be too black, whatever that means. That's what they say. And so then they call me because statistically speaking, I count as 5 white people. And it's an easy gig. You just show up in a hockey jersey and read your credit report. That's progress. I'm all for it. Yeah. Yeah, but like I said, my uncle, he had a horse when he was a kid. I drive a hybrid car, and I am telling you that because I want you to know that I'm a better person than you. I do drive a hybrid car. It's a 1989 Ford Crown Victoria. gas on the highway, below 5 miles per hour, pushing. Two forms of locomotion. Love that car. That was the car I took the driver's test as when I was a kid. I was a Pennsylvania State driver's test. That was awful. This makes me angry to this day. I had to parallel park that car to get my driver's license. Have you ever tried to back up a Ford? It's like backing up an aircraft carrier. It's impossible. And it's so, oh my God. And honestly, why do we care if teenagers can parallel park? Is that something that should be even on a drive? Who gives a shit if you can parallel park? Is that a valuable life skill that a teenager needs before they get behind the wheel of a flying metal death box? No, it is not. You don't have to parallel park once in your entire life. You can find a parking garage. You can park on the street. You can circle the block. You can give up and go home. You don't need to parallel park. So who cares? Why are you giving me a driver's license? Because I have this skill. If you're giving me, a teenage driver, a license, I should have teenage driving skills. What they should have done, the final test, they should have taken me from Philadelphia. They should have dropped me off in the parking lot at RFK Stadium here in D.C. at 4 in the morning with like a rusted out Ford Fiesta, battery dead because my pothead friends left the lights on after the Def Leppard concert because that'll make it easier to find, right? Yeah. I gotta get home. They all wanna go to Taco Bell, but if I don't get this car started, I can't get back to Philadelphia. I got the SATs in the morning, 8 a.m. If I don't get 8:50 this time, I'll be working the deli counter at Safeway the rest of my life. I pass that, give me my license. That's all I'm saying. We need to test children. Kids are going to be soft. They're going to be so freaking soft in the next generation. It's going to be a miracle if anyone lives to the age of 25. That's right. All my nephews and nieces and cousins, they all have cell phones. So their parents buy them cell phones, and it's like a 12-year-old with a cell phone. I'm like, well, what do they need a cell phone for? Oh, well, they need it in case there's some sort of an emergency or does that. There's 6 billion people in the world. Most of us made it to adulthood without the benefit of smartphone technology. Somehow we pulled through, you know? And now it's like, as a matter of fact, you shouldn't ever, ever have a cell phone when you're a kid. They're like, well, they need to call me if there's an emergency. No. If there's an emergency and you're a teenager, who's the first person you're going to call? Your parents? No. They're the last people you want to call, and you shouldn't. You should figure out how to do shit for yourself, because that's how you become a man. You got to figure out how to get a car out of an impound lot. Or fake arson at a beach house. You got to figure that stuff out. Everyone's obsessed with cell phones. My friends bought me a BlackBerry for my birthday. I was like, yay, happy birthday. We got you a $700 a month data plan. Yay! Woo! I'm going to use it to look up the many places that I can buy dog food to afford this phone. Yeah. Wee! Like, it's amazing. Your old phone's a piece of crap. All right, my old phone was a piece of crap. All it did was let me call anyone who's important to me in the entire world from almost anywhere on the whole world. What a piece of shit. Yeah. Like, you can watch TV on it. I don't want to watch TV on my phone. Why are we narrowing the entire human experience down to individual things? TV has a very specific purpose. You watch it as a family so that you don't have to talk during dinner. But that's the weirdest thing to me. We have all these amazing ways of communicating with each other. We really do. And I seriously believe we are worse than ever at communicating with each other. You have so many options, and we're just worse and worse and worse. I'm guilty. I have my new BlackBerry. The other day, I'm laying around, and I think of a question I want to ask my wife. Pull out the BlackBerry, give her a call. Straight to voicemail. Leave a message. A few minutes go by. I'm like, well, this is weird. So I can send emails with it. Send her an email. A few minutes go by, nothing back. I'm getting a little worried, so I send her a text message. A few minutes go by, nothing. So I rolled over and I tapped her on the shoulder. Like, you want to do it? She's like, no. Weird world. Yeah. Which brings us to almost the conclusion of the show. Almost. Wrapping it up. One last thing. You guys, first off, thank you guys so much for coming out. You've been a wonderful, wonderful crowd. I couldn't have asked for better. And thank you so much for being. I really do mean that to Jared and to everyone. And thank you guys very much. Give yourselves a round of applause. Hooray you. You paid $10 to watch me lose about a gallon of sweat. I know, and that's exciting. Yeah. It's like a Gallagher concert. You wear a poncho in the front row. But I always like to finish talking about something that kind of brought us all together. And this is something I really do believe is. I like to talk about love when I finish the show. You know, this isn't a good subject, right? Yeah, the enthusiasm's overwhelming. let's do this upright. No, it's good. It's Saturday night. We're out. We're having a good time. We're enjoying some comedy shows. Let's make some noise right now if you are in love. Come on! Yeah! All right! Yes! That's what Phil Collins is talking about. But not everybody cheered, and everyone gets a chance to cheer here at the DC Improv. So now, make some noise if you are just in it for the sex. Come on! Yes! Excellent! Good. Do you people believe in love at first sight? Do you believe in that?
Yes.
No! Come on! Oh, God, no! Oh, I don't want to shit on your parade, but that's not love. That's Hallmark cards and teddy bears. That's lust. That's a wonderful, great thing, but that's not love. Or maybe you were one of the lucky ones, and over time, your lust turned into love. But most of you people know exactly what love is. Love is finding someone you can tolerate just barely and then sticking with them for as long as humanly possible, right? That's what my parents taught me. Love is when you come down the steps in the morning and that person is sitting at the kitchen table biting their toenails. And the only thing that goes through your head is like, ooh, I made a promise. Ah. And the second thing you think is like, oh, biting your toenails. Now you're flexible. Keep it fresh. That's a good lesson. Always keep it fresh. Be excited. Be in love. Just own up to it. Don't be embarrassed. Cute little nicknames for each other. Pet names are a wonderful thing. Keep it in a relationship. I dated a girl once. She used to call me Pumpkin because I have a huge orange head. I used to call her Baby because I couldn't remember her name. And, yeah. I'm settled down now. Some of you guys are still out there playing the field, and I got a little advice for you as well. If you're going to be using pet names, if you're going to be using little names for various ladies, if you're seeing numerous ladies at the same time, do not ever use the wrong name on the wrong lady, because they will know. It'll blow up in your face. Do what I did. Use the same name for every lady. Chocolate Princess. Yeah. And if she says, I'm white, then you say you're also racist. Kick it to the curb. That's what you do. That's what you do. Some of you did not cheer when I asked if you were in love, and I'm going to tell you something. Put yourself out there. It's always worth the risk. I am not going to stand here and lie to you. Bad things can happen. Every guy in this room knows there is no worse feeling in the world than when you look into a woman's eyes for the first time, you say, I love you. And the only thing she says back to you is, please sit down, you're ruining my wedding. It's a kick in the balls. Literally, her dad will come over and kick you in the balls. You can get cheated on. Is anyone cheating on anyone right now? On up to it. Come on. If you're doing it right, they're not here. You can get cheated on. I was cheated on. Hard to believe, I know. Ooh. Whatever. Walk around on this. I dated a girl for 4 years, and she cheated on me. 4 years. I thought I was out. I thought I was like, this is the girl. I thought I was going to marry her. I dated her for 4 years, and she cheated on me, which is just crushing. And you know, she's like, oh, I slept with another guy. And I was like, why would you do that? She's like, well, I wanted to test, see if I was ready to be with one man for the rest of my life. And I said, well, I am not a scientist. But that's a very poorly designed test. It's kind of like saying, I don't know if you're bulletproof. I'm going to shoot you in the face. The worst part, though, is I thought 4 years, I thought I was done. I thought I was going to get married. And that's, it's an exciting time if you think you're going to get married, because let me tell you something. I think like most people in this room, dating's wonderful. Dating's great. But most people treat dating like a marathon. You do it once so that you get the t-shirt and then you never have to do that shit ever again, right? Love is wonderful and special, but we all want to get over the finish line to that very special kind of love, the kind of love where you don't really talk and you watch a lot of Law and Order. That's what we're shooting for. Where instead of saying, you look beautiful, you just turn on another episode of CSI. That's all. That's what we want. And I thought I was done the marathon. I'm like, oh my God, here I am, 26 miles down, 0.2 to go. And I'm like, ah, and I'm running down the street, like, oh God, yes. And all your friends are on the side, they're cheering. You're like, go, go, man, go. Like, yeah, and they're handing you Cheese Whiz or whatever they hand people who run. I don't know. Like, ah. And it's driven down your chest. You're like, yes, I'm in a lot of pain, but this is, I'm sure, totally worth it. And you're almost there. And you're like 50 feet from the, 25 feet, 10 feet, 5 feet, 4 feet, 3. You're just about to cross that line. And then a lion jumps out and bites your damn leg off. And you're like, whoa. Lion. And you're in shock. You don't know what to do. You're like, screw this. We'll finish the race. We'll figure out the details later. And you start belly crawling for the finish line. Trail of blood gushing behind you. 3 feet, 2 feet, 1 feet. You're just about to cross the line. And then the race organizer comes out. She puts her foot on your forehead. She says, oh, no. You're not finishing this race. What you have to do, you have to crawl all the way back to the starting line. And then you got to start a whole new race. A race with only other crippled people. And the name of this race is your 30s. Enjoy! Start hopping! I shouldn't be bitter, though. I dodged a bullet on that one. She was a really strict atheist, and I am a god. So, yeah. Wouldn't work out. But keep at it is the point. Run that next race. It's worth it. You know, a lot of things happen along the way. You meet a lot of great people, and eventually, you know, maybe you win. I got married last year. It was a wonderful affair, and just a great time. It's expensive, though. It's very expensive. Ridiculously expensive. Just like, oh my God, expensive. You have to look on ways to cut down. I gave my wife a coal ring, and then my plan is to put her under lots of heat and pressure for the next 5 million years. Yeah. Last thought for the evening, I'll leave you with this, is people spend a lot of money on ways. They do. It's kind of like the apex of whatever, love, life, and people just spend a lot of money, ridiculous amounts of money. They have 5,000 TV shows about how much money people spend on this stuff. And the thing that kills me, every time you go to someone and you say, how was your wedding day? What do they say? It was a blur. Went by so fast, I hardly got to enjoy it. If you're going to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on a ceremony you're not even going to remember, don't waste it on your wedding. Spend it on your funeral. Because life is long. And you might have 4 or 5 weddings. But you're only gonna have one funeral, right? So blow it the hell out, is my point. Make it the biggest party of your recently ended life. I have my funeral planned. It's going to be awesome. It's probably next week. Check the papers. You're all invited. We're going to do this. Huge, huge hall. I'm going to have 10 pallbearers all wearing ill-fitting, ugly tuxedos. Not flattering in the least. They're going to be pissed about it, right? Yeah. They're gonna carry my casket. It's going to be a 12-piece band. No DJ. I am springing. For the band, yes. Elegant, class. It's going to be an open bar, because it's not a party without an open bar, right? Oh, yeah. Drinking and dancing all night long. It's going to be amazing. And then finally, around 2 in the morning, when it starts to quiet down, I'm going to form a circle around my casket. My widow's going to come out. She's going to walk up to the casket. She's going to take the wreath off the top. She's going to throw it over her shoulder, and whoever catches it will be the next person to die. Thank you guys very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. From 2011, I Take Requests, recorded right in the DC Improv Lounge. I really sincerely hope you enjoy it. It's one of my favorite things I ever did as a stand-up comedian. And comedy's subjective. Not everybody is everybody's cup of tea. But I really, truly do hope you got some enjoyment out of this now that it is, of course, the end of days. So, hey, if you did have a good time listening to that album, please support the DC Improv. Go over to dcimprov.com. Check out venue credits, check out the staff GoFundMe, which I believe is still accepting donations for another couple days. Just support it. We're a great comedy club. We're going to be here when all this is over to help you laugh. In the meantime, if you have the ability to help, we'd really appreciate it if you can. Thank you, and we'll see you on the other side.